this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the September issue of Ladies Home Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called The Odd Couples. Meet five sets of very unlikely best friends. If these guys can get over their differences, maybe we humans can too. This article is by Emily Chow. Some animals are born enemies, it's true, but you can also find surprising interspecies friendships. A dog who's best buds with a cat who likes to cuddle with her BFF, a pet rat. Animal behavior isn't just about instinct, says John C. Wright, Ph.D., professor of psychology at Mercer University in Georgia. If they're taught from an early age to play nice with other creatures, animals may be able to overcome their natural urge to hunt or flee. That's why you generally see animal odd couples among domestic creatures. Still, there are mysterious bonds. In 1992, some wild polar bears in Canada spent over a week roughhousing playfully with a pack of Canadian Eskimo dogs while renowned nature photographer Norbert Rossing happened to be on hand and took the photographs. This now famous bear-dog encounter shows that the instinct for play is so powerful it can sometimes override a creature's carnivorous nature. According to Stuart Brown, founder of the National Institute for Play and an expert in human and animal behavior, we've rounded up a couple of our favorite dynamic duos to prove that opposites do attract, even in the animal kingdom. Pen pals. It was so cold one winter that Lisa Richards decided to raise piglet Minerva, Minnie for short, indoors alongside her Icelandic sheepdog, Barky. Richards, an executive-turned-farmer, had found newborn Minnie cold and lifeless under a pile of hay on her farm in New Hampshire. Luckily, she was able to nurse the piglet back to health. Within 2 months, Minnie was house-trained and best friends with Barky. The two liked to snuggle and kiss and even play ball. Minnie now lives outside, but her bond with Barky is just as strong as ever. To this day, every morning, the two have a big old snuggle fest. Our next odd pair? Aurora. A newborn lamb was too little to be kept with the other sheep at Animal Acres, a sanctuary in California. Instead, we let her run around the yard, says founder Lori Houston. One of the first things she did was befriend our cat, Tyler. The two played chase and hide-and-seek all day long. Even though Aurora is now with our sheep, Tyler still keeps an eye on her, says Houston. Our next pair? Melanie Dawn Harder and her husband, Alan, planned on keeping their two chinchillas away from their new pug, Empress Baby, since they were told that the dog had been surrendered to a local shelter for behavioral issues. To their surprise, it was love at first sight for the pink-white chinchilla and the dog. Lightning came right up to Baby until they went nose to nose, and the dog didn't even growl. Now, Baby and Lightning play every night, and the patient pug lets the chinchilla groom her face and paws and even jump on her back. Our next pair is about a pig. Waterford the pig arrived at Winslow Farm, an animal sanctuary in Massachusetts, and a resident cat, Spring, went gaga. The two were inseparable, eating and sleeping together. But competition arose last winter when Edwin, an orange tabby, fell for Waterford too. His favorite game? Tug of war. Waterford will take a piece of rope in his mouth, and Edwin will start to go after it. It's remarkable. You never think that these little indoor cats would be palling around and playing with a giant pig. Our last pair? When the Bishi family of Fort Dodge, Iowa, first got guinea pigs, they suddenly saw a new side of Ink, their black lab. He sees himself as their father, says Meg Beasley. He watches over them, lies down with them, and likes to check in on them whenever there's a new litter. The feeling is mutual. The little ones zoom straight to Ink and try to snuggle by his paws. But their mom, Luna, is the most adventurous. She likes to burrow under his body to get warm. Ink doesn't mind, unless she squeals too much. The next article is Michelle Obama's New Mission by Sally Lee. Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign, getting kids to exercise and eat healthier, has become the cause closest to her heart. In an exclusive interview with Ladies Home Journal, Editor-in-Chief Sally Lee chatted with the First Lady about her fight against childhood obesity, what she's teaching her own daughters, how she keeps fit, and the one vegetable she refuses to eat. First question from Sally. What made you choose Let's Move as your first major initiative? Here's Michelle Obama's answer. It's personal for me. As a working mom in Chicago, I live through what a lot of working families are dealing with. You have your job. Your kids are going in 50 million different directions. You're trying to fix dinner, doing things on the go. You're eating out because you don't have time to cook. I saw the toll it was taking, not just on how my family looked, but how we felt. But by making a few minor changes, I saw some pretty significant results. It made me think, do most families understand that these small changes can make a difference? I wanted to create a message that gave parents better information. Sally says, such as, here's her answer. How do we make eating a focus of our children's lives? How do we make fruits and vegetables fun? I wanted to open up a dialogue about healthy eating that wasn't accusatory, that didn't place blame, because that doesn't make parents feel better. Parents are doing the best they can. Also, physical activity is key. It's not just what kids are eating, it's how they're moving. Sally's next question. My kids come home from school and they have so much homework and piano lessons and everything else. How can parents help kids find extra time for exercise? Michelle Obama's answer. We have to think about it not as another activity, but as play. I tell my girls it simply is running up and down the hallway with the dogs. Think of creating opportunities for kids to play. They can play inside just as easily as they can play outside. In some communities, playing outside isn't safe. It's difficult to look at a mother and say, you should let your kid ride a bike when there's gunfire going around them. A lot of it's turning off the TV, creating more boundaries around computer time. Sally's next question, do you limit your girls' screen time? Michelle Obama's answer. We do. My girls can't watch TV during the school week, and generally they have limited time over the weekend. During the school week, they can only use the computer if it's for schoolwork. Sally's next question. How do you talk to your daughters about nutrition? In what way are you a role model for them? From my research for this interview, I got the distinct impression you like pie. Here's her answer. Right. And French fries. One of the reasons I talk about pie and burgers is because if you tell people they can never have the stuff they love, they'll shut down. What is life without things you love to eat? For me, it's pie. So what I tell my girls is treats are special. They're not something you have every day. When we were growing up, we never had dessert every night. You didn't have a snack when you wanted one, probably because the economy was too tough. A bag of potato chips had to last the week. Those limitations and the fact that families cooked more at home created the balance that is now being lost because times have changed and people are busier. Telling a busy mother she's got to prepare a home-cooked meal every night is going to shut her down. I couldn't do it. Sally's question. So what kind of strategies can you offer parents who can't make regular family dinners? The answer? Some of it's changing priorities and making the time to sit down together. It may not be every night, When we were younger, Sunday was one of the nights we sat around the dinner table together. If you think in terms of that being important, then you will find the time. The overall message of Let's Move is balance. Do we have a vegetable on the plate? Have we incorporated fruit? What's the portion size? Portion sizes have gotten out of control. With my kids, before they get a second helping, I'll ask them, are you really hungry? Or is this something you want to do because you're bored? Sally's next question. Your mother lives with you. Is she in sync with your healthy eating rules? Answer. My mom swears I'm much more strict than she was. Yeah, she tends to spoil the girls a little bit, but she believes in not sending mixed messages. That's something families have to think about, making sure both parents are on the same page. If one adult is putting vegetables on the plate and the other one is saying, you don't have to eat them, that's difficult. Question. Are you and President Obama on the same page? Or is one of you more lenient than the other? Answer. We're pretty consistent, but that requires that we spend time talking about our health goals for our kids. Before we set up activities for them, we usually sit down and think about what the girls are doing. Are they overloaded? What's missing? Even with his busy schedule, he's very involved in thinking about the girls' lives. Question. What other healthy changes have you brought to the White House? Answer. Well, we hope that we've brought an appreciation for physical fitness. The president and I work out every day, and we encourage many of our staffers, particularly our senior staff who are here day and night, to make time for exercise. I think the president serves as a good role model because as busy as he is, he exercises every day. It's a part of what keeps him going. You do get to a point where exercise becomes something that you need, like water, and we try to promote that. Question. You get up every morning at 4:30 a.m. to work out. Are there ever times when you say, forget it, and don't make it to the gym? Answer. Today, Michelle Obama laughs. All of the last weekend, I ate everything that was available. In fact, we had takeout food. Question, were you back in Chicago? Yes, we were back in Chicago, and we had a day of having all our favorite stuff, deep dish pizza, barbecue. So, yeah, there are absolutely times when you just don't feel like it. That's why the times I do feel like it, I push myself. Question, does exercise help you deal with stress? Answer, oh, definitely, and it makes you feel better about yourself. I always think, don't think about how you're feeling during the workout. Think about an hour and a half from now, how good you're going to feel the rest of the day. Question. It's difficult for mothers to talk to their kids, especially daughters, about weight issues. Is there any evidence or advice that you can give parents about that? Answer. Well, I never talk about weight with my girls. I try not even to talk about my weight, because you're right, it's a sensitive issue. My girls are preteens, and they're seeing their bodies in a whole different way. We have conversations about health, food, and activity. I tell them sports are something I want them to engage in because it's good for them. It's good to practice teamwork, to understand what it means to suffer a loss, to win with grace. It has nothing to do with weight. It has everything to do with being a well-rounded person. Also, I have them do a sport that they like and a sport that I like. I want them to understand what it feels like to do something you don't like and to improve. Because in life, you don't always get to do the things you want. Question, don't you get pushback on that? Answer, oh yeah. Tennis was the sport I chose for them because you can play it for a lifetime. When they started, the racket was bigger than Sasha. She was frustrated because she couldn't hit the ball. Malaya didn't understand why I was making them play it, but now they're starting to get better, and they actually like it. And I'm like, Mom was right. And they see me exercise. I'll say, you see Mommy getting up every day. I do it because I have to stay healthy. If you want me to run around with you, I've got to be in good shape. Now my kids are young, so we'll see if I drive them crazy. But hopefully they'll grow up with a healthy sense of confidence about themselves. And in terms of weight, those things work themselves out. Kids fluctuate so much at this age. They're bananas one minute and pearls the next. Question, is there a healthy food that you just can't eat or the girls won't eat? Answer, there are tons of them. What's your worst nightmare? Beets. I'm a believer that there is a beet genie. People who love beets love them, and people who hate beets can't stand them. Neither the president nor I have the beet gene, and there are lots of healthy things that my kids don't like. But our rule is you've got to finish your vegetables. And if somebody says, I'm full, then it's like, okay, if you're full, you're done. But you have to finish your vegetables and don't ask for dessert. Because if you're full, you're full. You can't be full just for the healthy stuff. That's the joke in our household. The truth is, some of the flavors in vegetables are harsh for young kids. But if they don't start getting their palates used to it, they won't change. Recently, I was on a sort of cleanse, and I was just eating vegetables. Question, how did the cleanse work for you? Answer, the cleanses are good for a short period of time. I can't live my life on a cleanse, but they help me clean out my palate, because when you start adding things like sugars into your diet, you start craving them. And the more you eat, the more you crave. So maybe I'll do a cleanse for 2 days. It isn't a way of life because I like food too much. But if it's good to break your mindset. Last question. I recently interviewed former First Lady Laura Bush, and she talked about how when she left the White House, she felt physically lighter, that her burden had been lifted. Are the pressures involved in being First Lady something you're cognitive of? Answer. I think it's a self-protective mechanism not to think about it. If you were ever to stop and think about this stuff, you would become debilitated. Instead, if you approach each day new and fresh, with every experience as something to take in and learn from, time flies. It'll be 2 years in the White House before you know it. I can imagine that when it's time to step back and reflect, it will feel like a huge relief. But in this moment, I'm just trying to get stuff done. I'm focused on trying to move this initiative forward. Random acts of bravery. Inspiring stories of remarkable women who risk their safety, even their lives, to rescue someone in danger. By Naomi Rand. A real lifesaver. Kathy Pisano, a 48-year-old personal trainer at an athletic club in New York, is outside working with a client. Do you hear that? Her client asks. Pisano turns to see a woman frantically pacing the rocky shoreline. Someone help! My husband and son fell out of their canoe and they're going to drown, the woman screams. Pisano leaps over the fence that separates the club from the shoreline and sees two tiny dots out in the choppy waters of Long Island Sound. It's November and bitterly cold. Though the father and son are wearing life jackets, the 50-mile-per-hour winds and the current are working against them. Stripping off her hoodie and kicking off her sneakers, Pisano dives into the water. It's frigid, and for a second she's stunned, but then her adrenaline kicks in. Pisano swims the 100 yards out to them. As she approaches, she sees the child clinging to the father's head. I can't make it, the man says. Just take my son. But Pisano refuses. You can do this, she insists. She swims behind them and pushes the pair all the way back to the shore where it's mayhem. The beach is packed with emergency vehicles, police, and onlookers. Two of Pisano's co-workers wade into the water to help. When Pisano emerges, a stranger wraps a coat around her. The mother embraces her. How can I ever thank you, she says. Inside the clubhouse, Pisano changes into dry clothes. She's surprised by the number of people who said they would never have been able to do that. I was the first one on the scene, she says. Besides, I'm a mother myself. When I heard the woman say, my son, my baby, I knew I had to do something. Our next hero is Karen Nowoski. Karen, 34, is headed out for groceries, dressed for her day off in flip-flops and shorts. She's driving down an Atlanta, Georgia highway with her son, 12, in the passenger seat. The traffic comes to an abrupt stop. Nowoski, a firefighter, immediately realizes that there's been a three-car pileup ahead. She gets out to help. People in two of the vehicles have minor injuries, but the third car is a wreck. Smoke is pouring from under the hood, and the passenger's side door is caved in. A man's leg is sticking out of the window, and he's moaning in pain. Nowoski has done rescues before, but never without equipment or backup. The driver is shaken and refuses to move, but she insists. She gets him out of the car and drags him off to the side of the road. Then she goes back to assist the passenger. Flames split over the windshield. Nowoski knows she has to get the man out immediately. Sliding to the driver's seat, she grabs him under his arms, hoists him over the center console, and drags him from his car. Just as they reach the side of the highway, Nowoski turns back to see that the vehicle has burst into flames. The incident makes the local news, and later someone posts a message on Facebook, "Way to go, woman power." Our next hero, the long haul. Shelly Johnson, 22, and her boyfriend Aaron, 24, are heading to Maine by the way of the New Hampshire on a blazing hot summer afternoon. On the spur of the moment, the young couple decide to hike to the top of a waterfall they spot on the side of the road. After reaching the summit, Cole shows off by inching closer and closer to the edge. Suddenly, he loses his balance and slips. Johnson looks over the cliffs and spots him face down in a pool of water on one of the cliffs below her. She scrambles down, reaches Cole, and flips him over. There's a huge gash above his left eye, and he's not breathing. Johnson, a nursing student, gives him mouth-to-mouth. When Cole opens his eyes, she drags him out of the water onto the ledge. She takes off her shorts and uses them as a bandage. "Help!" she cries out, but there's no one around. Cole has lapsed into unconsciousness again. So the 115-pound Johnson cradles her 160-pound boyfriend in her arms and lifts him like a baby. She starts down the mountain. When her strength gives out, she sits and pulls Johnson's arms over her shoulders. She carries him the rest of the way like that, hanging on her back. When she can no longer stand, she sits and slides. It takes 45 minutes to get within sight of the parking lot. Finally, she spots a group of teens hanging out. She frantically calls to them. They come to her aid and dial 911. And the ambulance arrives, and Cole is soon airlifted to the hospital, where he is diagnosed with brain trauma. He stays on life support for 2 days, but eventually makes a full recovery. "No doubt about it, Shelley saved my life," he says. "She is a true hero." Special delivery. Mary Kilroy, a 56-year-old bus driver in Florida, is heading home from her afternoon shift. As she pulls into the gas station on the corner of University Drive and McNabb Road, she notices a dark van parked off to the side. Standing next to it is a man on a cell phone, frantic. Kilroy notices a woman inside the van, hugely pregnant and doubled over in pain. "She's giving birth," the man says. Kilroy runs to her car, pulls a beige sheet out of the trunk, and spreads it over the cement. She helps the woman lie down and then calls 911. "I can see the baby's head," she tells the operator, "but it won't come out. What do I do?" She's instructed to push on the mother's pelvic bone, and when she does, the baby emerges. But the 7-pound baby boy is purple, and Kilroy notices that his umbilical cord is wrapped around his neck. Common sense takes over. She uses her finger to loosen the loops, then slips them over the newborn's head. He still isn't breathing, so Kilroy instinctively smacks him on the bottom. The baby let out a lusty howl. By the time EMS arrives, everyone's fine. When Kilroy stops by the hospital the next day to check on the happy mother, she gives her a hug and gushes with gratitude. "You're my angel," she says. Our next hero, Alina Knowles, 25, is 5 months pregnant with her third child and is preparing to move from her house in Alabama. Her father-in-law has come over to help with packing. Suddenly, they hear firecrackers, and Knowles heads to the door to check it out. Those are gunshot, her father-in-law yells, shoving her to the floor. Peering out of the window, Noel sees her next-door neighbor, nephew, Michael, 28, welding a rifle, then watches in horror as he methodically fires at six people sitting on her neighbor's front porch. As an eerie silence descends, the gunman strides over to his car and drives away. Immediately, the pregnant Knowles races outside and across the yard to see if she can help. She finds a gruesome scene. Everyone appears to be dead. But then, Knowles, hearing the sounds of a wailing baby and sees a four-month-year-old lying under her mother's body, she picks up the baby and is dashing back to her house when McLandon returns. She ducks behind a parked car and through its tinted glass sees McLandon's gun poked out of the car window. Knowles' father-in-law, who is now standing on the lawn, tries to calm him down, giving Knowles and the baby a chance to hide behind another van. In all, 10 people died before McLandon took his own life, but the baby is spared because of Knowles' daring rescue and the bravery of her father-in-law, who also survives. Would she risk her life again? I know my neighbors would have done it for me, she said, if I was in trouble. Our last hero, Nick O'Neill, 29, is on her way home. As she turns onto her street in Sacramento, California, she smells smoke and sees flames spurting out of the apartment complex across from her house. O'Neill jumps out of her car and runs over to a crowd of onlookers. Is everyone out? She asks. There's a blind man inside the apartment, one resident says. For some reason, he's refusing to leave. Explosions rock the building. It sounds like a war zone. Someone has called 911, but there's no signs of the fire department. O'Neill realizes there's no time to lose, so she runs up the flight of stairs to the apartment and bangs on the door. I'm here to help you, she says. There's a fire. But the tenant, who is blind, is dazed and confused. He tells her to go away. O'Neill pleads with him, but he stonewalls her. Looking through the pane glass next to the door, she sees the apartment is filling with smoke. Afraid that he'll be unable to breathe, she uses her forearm to punch through the glass. The fire is closing in. The heat is intense. I'm coming in, she says, and she kicks the door in. She grabs the man from behind and literally drags him downstairs and outside to safety. Only then does she realize what she's done to herself. Shards of glass are embedded in the deep cuts of her arm. O'Neill ends up needing 18 stitches, a small price to pay for being able to save someone's life, she says. A little bit of health news. Hyperthyroid risks. More women than men have hyperthyroidism, which triggers symptoms like weight loss, chronic diarrhea, and nervousness. Now, researchers suggest those younger than 45 with the condition have a 44% increased risk of stroke. Why? Hyperthyroidism can cause an irregular heartbeat, which lets blood pull in the heart and form clots that can travel to the brain. So this might be a test you need to ask your doctor about. Step it up. Need motivation to get moving? Women who take at least 10,000 steps a day have a 72% lower risk of belly fat, hypertension, and high cholesterol. So get moving. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.